I've been threatened with the local heroes or some rock group is going to play their tape if I don't start. So I think I better start. You'll finish. Why not? Happy to have y'all here. I'm sorry we ran out of coffee. Rita got the last cup, I think. She got the last half cup. Okay. But there's plenty of donuts for you all. Now that's why we got such a big crowd here. I have three purposes of this meeting today. One, this will be what will you call my last pep talk. This will be the last pep talk that I will give you all. Number two, this will be my last annual report. And number three, I want to say goodbye to you. This would be the most appropriate way for us to say goodbye. Eleanor and I are going to leave next Tuesday and go to the United Arab Emirates for a couple of weeks, and we'll be back on, the last week in June. So I have really about five or six more working days that I will be here. Come July 1, I don't know what's going to happen on July 1. I'm not going to be here, and I know that. The provost and I have not talked about where he is on July 1, but that's something we can take care of at some later time. Okay. Usually when we get this speech, we come together and I say, well, we'll get by. It'll be another year. It's going to be a tough year. We don't have any money. We're going to get by. You've all heard that one before. And I've gone back and I've reviewed not our budget figures, but reviewed how much money we have spent. During the years. We spent a lot of money. We started off, when I started off as director, we had a budget of about $700,000. And that doubled in 6 years, and then up to 1.4, and then it doubled to 2.8 in the next 4 years. Then there was a little drought. It took 10 years to double again, and then it took 8 years to double again. So you can see that although we have always had a problem, we've never had enough money to do what we wanted to do. The university has supported us somewhat. We have kept doubling. Our budget, our expenditures this year will be about $12 million. So it has been a constant growth. Now, not all this money's come from the university. Some of it's come from foundations, some from grants, some from other parts of the university. But basically, the university says the library is important. The library is an important part of our operation, and we've got to make it, we've got to pay for it, and they have paid for it. If I look into where we're going next year, and I make a projection for next year, I'd say that next year we're going to get by all right. You'll have to struggle a little bit, as you've always struggled before, A little problem here and a little problem there. We'll take a 1% or 2% cut probably for next year. But then, after that, we take another look at things, and we got things like the crew report, and we got the courage report, and we got IDEA, we've got lifelong education, we got a whole bunch of university thrusts that are going to be taking place. And all these are going to cost money. All these are going to, they're not free. All of them have a price tag on them. And so the university is going to have to find some money for these. If they don't find money for these, they go back and say, okay, now let's everyone talk about taking a budget cut. And we talk about taking a budget cut, and then the library is always usually left out of the budget cut. So we go through this process on a continuing basis. There's one thing that's sitting there that scares me to death. I'm glad it didn't come during my tenure, and that is forward funding. The university has borrowed about $25 million against future funds. They've let us do that. Now the state could any time could call that money back. They say, we want your $25 million back. If we had to pay that $25 million back, it would be disaster. But fortunately, it's not just us. All the public school systems in the state have done the same thing. They've all borrowed against forward funding. So we've got a great big debt out there that we all owe back to the state that the state could call back, probably won't call back. But if they do call it back, boy, am I glad I'm going to be gone. Imagine the university losing $22 million. That would be a big hunk of money. Well, let's talk a little bit about where we've been and where we've how we got there and where we're going from here on in the collections. Let me mention the collections. When I became director, we had a collections of 720,000 volumes, and while leave, we'll have collections of about 3.5 million, 3.4 million or something like that. There are certain implications of this sort of growth pattern that I cannot get too excited about national preservation efforts. I've not been too excited about national preservation efforts because our preservation problems are different than the problems at the University of Michigan and the problems at Iowa. When books are acquired, they get used up. The shelf life is very short shelf life on many titles. They get worn out, they get poorly handled. We didn't buy those books back in the 50s and the 40s. We weren't buying those sorts of books. We waited till they'd been in the monastery for several years, then we bought them and put them into an air-conditioned building. The heavy use period was gone, and so we've had them for research use. So our collections are good collections. I mean, physically, we're in pretty good shape compared to some of the others. But the implications of a collection that in, you know, just the time that I've been here, all of it in an air-conditioned building, the collections, 80% of the collections have come, right, you know, in that period of time. So that has some real implications on what our collections look like, what they're going to be tomorrow. It certainly have problems. We have problems in this building with our collections because of space and so forth, but we'll get back to that later. But I think if you look at the growth, it took us 112 years to get the first million volumes. It took us 10 years to get the second million volumes. And it took us a little less than 10 years to get to 3 million volumes. So you can see what kind of a growth we have and what kind of, if this keeps going, you know, in 20 years from now, you know, we're going to have 5.5 million volumes. We'll have 6 million volumes 20 years from now. And the university does not understand that we need 10,000 square feet each year just to house the new books we buy. If everything stays as it is, if there's no new money, there's no new programs, there's no new students, everything stays steady. We have to fire one faculty member a year in order to buy space to house the collections that we have. Now, you know, that's a ridiculous state that we're in, but this is what it boils down to. There's no good alternative to buying space that we have to have, because the collections will grow. If the collections are not growing, then we have some real problems. What are the strengths of our collections? I'd say that The basic strengths of the collections at Michigan State University, in spite of everything we talk about spatial collections and so forth, the basic strengths of the biological sciences. This is the way this university was founded, in the biological sciences. The growth has been in the biological sciences. The research effort at this university is on the biological sciences. So we have a really very, very, very good collections in the biological sciences. I remember when we first had our first medical school, the College of Human Medicine, we had some money from Commonwealth Fund to buy periodicals to buy materials in order to support this new medical push. It was very easy. We had to buy a few journals. The basic science stuff was all here. Surprisingly, the College of Veterinary Medicine had a lot of the basic medical journals, surgery, blood, all this sort of stuff was already here. So we bought a few journals out of the Commonwealth Fund and had a very, very good human medicine collection. When we got to osteopathic medicine, another new program came in osteopathic medicine, found out very quickly that the literature of osteopathic medicine and the literature of allopathic medicine were the same. I mean, we had to buy a few journals, a few trade newspapers and stuff like that, but basically they were the same thing. So we have had the medical programs added on the basis of that strength, that long strength that we had in the biological sciences. I think that another big strength of our collection is since 1960 we've done a hell of a good job of buying books, and we buy them on a current basis. And then I go back to my 80-20 rule, and that is that 80% of the use of library materials comes out of materials published in the past 20 years. And therefore, for 80% of the use on our campus, for 80% of the use on our campus, we have a better library than they have at the University of Michigan. I proposed that once to Fred Wagman when he was director at the University of Michigan. I don't think he liked it, but he couldn't really dispute it either. I mean, it is a fact that the use of materials is out of current materials. When I was putting some notes down last night, I had the current issue of the Centennial Review there, and there was an article by Richard Sullivan, one of our distinguished faculty members who's around all the time. And Dick had an article in the Medieval Church and the Patronage of Art. Now, any place that the 80-20 rule would apply would not be here. I checked his bibliography, and he had 35 items. 26 of them were 1970, 1980, and 9 of them were before that period. So this was 75-25, even in this specialized type of rule. So I think the real strength of a collection, and one that we have to constantly hold on to and constantly fight on, is the current materials. The current materials have to be purchased and have to be acquired in this library. And if we're buying the current materials, over time, we will have very, very good library collections. Of course, we're proud of many of our special collections, you know, our radical literature collection, our facsimile collections, and our Africana materials, Risorgimento, Italian history, French monarchy. These are areas where people do not think of Michigan State as having great strengths. And we do have great strengths, and these strengths are basically built on the basis of some faculty members and some library staff working together. And you'll find that over time that the great collections are built when we have faculty working with library staff. The faculty members can't do it alone, and we can do a better job than the faculty, but we do it much better when we're working closely with the faculty. So the librarians and faculty working together will build good collections. You look at the future of where we're going with our collections, a whole bunch of new packages. New packages come, no new material. It's a new everything rehashed, taken all over again. Put in a new compact disc or put in a new package, and it costs $10,000, and we have to buy it. Well, that always hurts, and that always bothers me when we have to buy an accumulated index to Chem Abstracts. That accumulated index is about $25,000 now, okay? And when we buy that accumulated index, we get no new information, but we spend $25,000. But we will have these new packages. New packages will be part of what we do, and there'll be a whole lot of new products, you know, a whole lot of new products. The compact disc stuff, the online material, software. You know, one of the things that I'm looking forward to in this summer or this fall is going back and looking at that software collection. There's something there on surgery. I want to learn how to be a surgeon. You know, and you can do it. You know, you can do it in a little Carol in the library. You can become a surgeon. You know, there are a whole bunch of exciting new things and exciting new packages that we got to stay with. I mean, we cannot look at the library as strictly a print-oriented thing. It's got to accept the new. It's got to accept the exciting new technologies. I can get very excited talking about this, and I think, boy, is this going to be fun? You know, I really envy you. Then I step back and I say, I wonder how they're going to pay for it, because it is costly. It is costly. We're going to have to reshape what we're doing, and I think the one thing that we really have to watch is that in reshaping what we're doing and how we're doing this is that the user does not have to pay for library services. I think that when we get to the place where only the rich can afford the information, then we got a very, very bad society. You know, I will join the students on Tenement Square, you know, when that happens, because you can't have it so that just the rich have access to information, and that's something that we'll have to always watch for. Library services during the past several years, well, I think that more than any place, we talk about library services, you say if it works, it's obsolete. And that's sort of the way it's been around here, you know. We got a good program going, and we say, let's make it better. All right, let me go back to 1958. That's a long time ago. I got a letter from the then director of libraries, Jackson Town. I'll read part of this letter to you. Dear Dick, I've studied your plan for redistribution of the books in the MSU library once again. I don't know if it was my plan once again or he studied it once again. But anyway, I must have had several plans, you know, that for redistribution of books in the library. That we'd been in this building 3 years, and we were then redistributing books, I guess. I do not wish to be misquoted regarding my views on these possible changes, so I'm taking the trouble to put all this in writing. My past objections, oh, I love this sentence, my past objections or present ones are by no means to be construed or permanent. I don't like it, but Don't hold me to that position. And he goes on to say, I note that you propose a what would be a sweeping change, and any serious failure in it would be react most unfavorably upon the library. There's a type of librarian who is restless, fuzzy-minded, endlessly interested in change for mere change's sake. The general public spots this type quickly and condemns him sharply. Now, I can guarantee you that the him is not generic. It was me, so not a sexist statement, you know. The general public spots this happen quickly and condemns him sharply. Then, quotations. I wrote this before I saw the state news editorial of today, which confirms my point. Well, Mr. Towne had problems with change. I had no problems with change. I found that change has worked very well for this library. We started off in this building with a divisional library. That was nice plan. That was very popular, and it worked for this building at that time. We quickly changed it from 6 divisions to 3 divisions instead of having it garbled up so much. We put circulation and assigned reading in the divisions and made each division sort of a separate unit by itself. We got the new building addition over here. And decided that what we would do is we'd build a closed stack, and we'd close the stacks, and we'd have an undergraduate library in this building, and all the undergraduate needs would be taken care of. I guess that didn't work, because we changed that one pretty fast. And I think another part of our services is that when we've done these things and we found out they don't work, we have enough courage to step back and make them work. You know, do away with them. You know, admit that we made a mistake, and let's not do that anymore. And so we've done that on a rather regular basis, and that's something that I'm glad that we were able to do. And so now we got rid of the undergraduate library, we got rid of the closed stacks, and we're back now to more or less of a modified division. You know, we have some divisional aspects of this collections, and we have some centralized services, and that seems to be a way to go. We build a new library building, we might go all the way back to divisions again. You know, you got to change with the times as that happens. But always a problem when we talk about service to undergraduates. We got a lot of undergraduates. I mean, you know, we have more undergraduates than most colleges. We have more undergraduates on the east end of the campus. We're talking about the new building being down across from the Epley building, the new library building. From there east, we have more undergraduates than probably 95% of all colleges and universities in the country. I mean, you know, we got 12,000 students from there east down there. And 12,000 is a big campus. So when we have so many students, we always have a problem. We have buy 5 copies of a book. I always figured that if you wanted to be popular and you wanted everyone to be happy with what you're doing, you buy 5 copies of every book so that when someone comes to get it at the library, they can find it. And they'd say, man, what a neat library, okay? But 5 years from now, what do you have? 5 years from now, you don't have much in the way of research collection. So you always have the problem. Do you buy 5 copies or do you buy 5 titles? If you're buying 5 titles, you're buying for the future and you're building a research collection. If you're buying 5 copies, you're buying some PR, okay? And so you gotta always keep that one in mind, that not only do we have a large number of undergraduates that we've got to take care of right now, but we also have a future that we have to work on. Automation, early decisions. I remember we went through this thing a long, long time ago. Early decision, rather go to have an integrated system or a single purpose thing. And everybody says, yeah, we're gonna have an integrated system. So we all were sitting around waiting for an integrated system. And this was going on in libraries all over the country. we decided rather early on that we'd like an integrated system, but we knew we weren't going to get one, so let's begin with one of our problem areas, which is circulation, and build from there. And so we automated circulation early on. Again, we did this with, we had some money for conversion of records from that we got from the Council on Library Resources, and again, we were taking this circulation thing out of our ongoing operation funds. This is nothing new from what we're doing right now. But we did get circulation up. It was a batch system. It didn't work very well. We finally got CSLI. It worked very well, but now it's dying down, and we're going into an integrated system. But in automation, as we look at where we're going with the future of automation in this library, it's going to be a constantly changing problem. We're always going to be there. We've got We've got enough money. We got enough money right now, thanks to a grant that we got from Kellogg, another hunk of money we got from Kellogg out of the lifelong education grant. We got some money that will put us in notice and get notice up and get us going on that. We've had Kellogg support. We've had support from the REED, which is a research and development program of the state. And we look at the future on this, and I say, yeah, as always, we'll make it work. We'll make it work. We'll do it out of our regular funds, and we'll make it work. I won't make it work. You all have made it work. You know, I don't mean we in the sense of me being involved at all, but you all have made these systems work, and you all take the challenge and go on with it. And sometimes I wonder if I'm challenging too much by asking too much of you and not giving you enough money to do it. But that's the way we have developed things here, and that's the way they work. problems. Let me mention problems very quickly. Space is a real problem. I mean, you know, you don't have to be around this building very long to know that we got a space problem. People will say, and people will justly say, man, the stacks are in a mess. The stacks are always in a mess this time of the year. If you think they're in a mess now, they're going to be worse next year, because as the building gets more and more full, then it's more and more difficult to shelve books. And students get frustrated. The students pull a book off the shelf, and they wonder, where did it come from? There's no room, you know? That space got filled up from the time they pulled it off and they're trying to put it back. And so it's going to be very difficult. Really, you could say that a library is completely full, when 80% of the shelves are full. 80% of the shelves are full. It's completely full. I mean, when the shelves are 80% full, you got a complete building. Our shelves are 95, 98, 99% full. And if we got money for a new building today, right now we got money, you wouldn't move into it until 1991 or 1992. And in that time, you got to add another third of a million volumes. All right, now that's another 3.5 faculty members you got to fire to house those, okay? So we're going to have a real space problem. If we were to suddenly get a lot of money like they have at Ann Arbor, okay, and we say we'll give you the same size library staff they have at Ann Arbor, so that means that for each one of you there'll be two more, okay? That's how many people they have at Ann Arbor. Where would we put them? I mean, where would we? You know, where. We need more staff, but where would we put more staff? We don't have space for more staff. The space problem was really, really going to be haunting us for the next 2 or 3 years, okay? I think we have a problem with not notice. We get notice up and notice will go. I think we have a problem with notice too, or whatever replaces notice, you know? It will die, and it will have to be replaced, and we should now be putting money away to replace it. And we're not putting money away to replace it. So that pretty soon we're going to have to start building up funds so that when it comes time for Notice 2 or it comes time for the next integrated system, we have the money to do it, and we don't have to take it out of ongoing operations as we have in the past. So I think that we got to start looking at funding some of this stuff in the way there. And library value, I would say if you go to the medical schools, go to the medical schools right now. Go to our three medical schools and nursing, four medical people would say, hey, Dick, I don't think libraries are as important as they were 10 years ago. And I would say, for them and for what they're doing, I would have to agree. I mean, they have changed their way of teaching. They no longer teach the way they did 10 years ago. They're relying much more on mediated instruction, much more on computer-assisted type of instruction, and you'll find that they will be big into the development of program software that will teach people, will be big into compact disc and that sort of stuff. So they're going to have a whole new technology and a whole new thing. So I'd say that the value of the library, the traditional library, as the medical people know it, is not as important today as it was for them 10 years ago. And I think that this is going to be true in many, many other areas. And I think that it's up to you to recognize the fact that we're going to have to continue to adapt adapt our programs. We can't fight the thing and say you can't do that without our permission. It's not going to do you any good. We're going to have to adapt our programs. We're going to have to be part of a whole change in the new technology and a whole change in the way kids are learning. You know, the kids learn differently today than they did. Certainly, they look differently today from when I first came here. It's just a whole different ballgame. So I would say that if you look at the library of the 21st century, you're going to see an entirely different library. I would hope that we could design libraries to keep people out instead of have people come in. How can we take the library resources and make them available to the user when the person needs it, at that point where they need the information? Why should they have to stop, come to the library, even with the new parking plan, look around an hour and a half, find a place to park, you know, come into the library, get an article, and then go back to their lab? You know, they forgot about it by that time. And they won't do it. They won't do it. They will find some other ways to do it. And so we've got to help them find the other ways so that we are an important part of the other ways that they are finding. And finally, I guess I would say that, man, you guys are great. You know, we've had a small staff. Always had a small staff. It's work because you all have worked and you've all worked very hard. And we've had small. We compare any way you look at it. You know, take the number of students per staff member. Take any count you want. This is a very, very small library staff for a major institution. This is a very, very good library staff for a major institution. You all have done just a super job. You've all been committed to the library. And if you weren't committed to the library, I would go away from here in a much different attitude. I can leave this library and say, hey, man, this is a good place. And it's a good place because you all made it that way. And I thank you all for that. And I wish you well from here on in. Thank you.